Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion. Dr. Maria Church, welcome, welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. I'm so delighted to have you. We met, I guess, more than a year ago, maybe. Feels like before.
It was about a year ago, yeah. Right at the beginning of COVID.
Before the world changed. And when we met, we found that we had so many things in common, including a passion for the word love.
Yeah.
And you've made that a big part of your life's work and your livelihood and your research. And I'm just so delighted to have you to talk about you and your life and your work and your beautiful book called Love-Based Leadership that was just completely revised as a 10th anniversary edition. And I was thinking this morning as I was preparing for today that Procter & Gamble just came out with a new tagline called Lead with Love. And so we know that this is really part of pop culture now.
Wow.
but you were a pioneer, and I want everyone to know that you knew that that was important way before Procter & Gamble and all their researchers, nothing against them. And I think where I want to start is one of the things you and I found that we had in common was resistance to this idea of love-based leadership. And I'm wondering if you can start with the story of your dissertation and anything else you want to say about, you know, way back when.
Yeah, way back when.
Yeah, so I thought that might be a kind of interesting way to enter, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah, well, it is kind of ironic and funny because when I was working on my dissertation study, you know, you were supposed to add to the great body of knowledge, right? And so I was earning a doctorate in organizational leadership. And so there were just a gazillion different leadership models, you know, everything from servant to transactional, transformational, so on and so forth. I didn't find anything that really was holistic in nature, you know, that celebrated the mind, body, and spirit. And I was heavy into my corporate career at the time when I did decide to go back to school. And I never really felt like I could bring my whole self to work. I really felt like I had to check my spirit or my soul at the door. And while I achieved great success in the corporate world, it still never felt right to me that I had to compartmentalize myself in such a way. So as I was taking this deep dive educationally, I thought, wow, how cool would it be to develop that model of holistic leadership, celebrating mind, body, and spirit. And so as I started to develop and build this model, I realized, of course, that the most powerful force on the planet is love. And I came into the realization that I was so steeped in fear in my work environment. And as I then really started to look outward and see that fear was such a huge component of our culture, that it made complete sense to me then that this holistic model, leveraging the power of the universe, really was the antithesis of fear, and that this was the model. This was what I wanted to add to the great body of knowledge, and I felt so compelled to do that. As I started developing it, I started getting all of this wonderful support from my cohort and my colleagues, and I'm thinking, I'm on the right track. And then the time came to actually put the committee together. Aha, that's when things started to shift a little bit. And I started getting a lot of resistance and a lot of pushback on the idea of love-based leadership. And I was so frustrated, Laurel. I finally pinned the dean up against the wall. And I know that sounds like an exaggeration, and I wish that it were.
I love really, that image, actually.
Yeah, it's reality. I'm like, what is going on? Why are you all giving me so much resistance with this leadership model? And she, you know, just got very frank with me at this point, another crazy doctoral student. And she said, you know, Maria, I think that this is a really important model that I think you do need to introduce to the world, but it is too controversial for the university. And you'll really probably have to wait to publish it until you have doctor in front of your name. And let me tell you, I was so disappointed and floored, dumbfounded at the fact that we're talking about an advanced conversation of leadership, and yet we cannot talk about the most powerful force on the planet. It really just, it really blew me away and stalled my research. Needless to say, I had to kind of regroup. Luckily, I was able to complete the dissertation and not go too far away from the love-based leadership model, but take one aspect of it and kind of flesh it out. But I did not, I don't think, mention the word love at all in my dissertation study.
My heart breaks for you because I can really put myself in that place. And I remember when I was first creating my change models that I have a piece in all my models about love, whether it's around coaching or leadership or personal growth. And I had the same resistance. I actually had at one point of two people who are still my dearest friends, we came together to create a company and they were like, you have to get rid of that love out of the model. It's got, jeez, you got to get rid of that. And we ended the partnership was probably a good idea. Anyway, we remained friends.
Vision might've been just a little bit different.
It's one of the things I was like, I'm an entrepreneur. I wasn't in an academic, you know, environment. And I was like, if I can't put the word love in my work, I don't want to do this work. So, but it continues to be like, I'm partnering with other people and we have this program called Lead with Love. And they're okay with compassion, but they really have trouble with. So anyway, thank you for being a love warrior. Thank you for sticking with it. I love the simplicity and the power of your model that I'm looking at here. And I would love for you to share with the audience, you know, these three aspects of love-based leadership. And
yeah, absolutely. You bet. And, you know, I think people still have some resistance today. I think we're making great strides, Laurel. I really do. I think we have quite a ways to go, but I see the movement and I've seen the movement over the last 10 years. So that's pretty exciting.
My feeling is that it's been accelerated over the last year, because if not now, when?
I wholeheartedly agree. Wholeheartedly agree. So the model is based on three primary pillars: love of self, love of source, and love of others. And underneath each one of those pillars are seven aspects that really speak to what that pillar of love looks like from a leadership perspective. And so love of self really begins it. And you know that you do the work as well, coaching and consulting and training, and any good solid leadership development program must begin with self-reflection and self-awareness. And so this model is no different. It really is focusing on developing ourselves through self-love. And it's so much greater than just being good to ourselves. And I don't want to diminish that. This has become part of our conversation, self-love, and part of an everyday dialogue, which is wonderful. Unfortunately, a lot of mental models around it has boil down to bubble baths and manis and pedis. And I am a big fan of bubble baths and manis and pedis, so don't get me wrong. However, loving ourselves and love of self is so much deeper than just those superficial behavioral acts. And so I really do focus on that. And within love of self are really those skills of perception shifting, which I believe 100% that is probably the most powerful tool in a leader's toolbox, is the ability to shift perceptions. Because what that does for us is that opens up the world of possibilities and opportunities and solutions. So that, you know, that's a part of it. Recognizing the power of choice is a part of it. And we always have a choice. You know, sometimes some choices are more desirable than others, but we always have a choice. And so these are our different aspects of love of self. And of course, self-care is absolutely 100% part of that. And the idea is, once we really focus on love of self and getting really centered and really solid of who we are as an individual and who we are as a leader, whether we're leading other people or whether we're leading our own lives. But getting really clear and solid on that is the beginning of love-based leadership. And then that leads to the second pillar, which is really love of source. And I very intentionally and strategically chose that term source because I didn't want people to mistake the model to be a religious doctrine. It is definitely a spiritual doctrine. It definitely brings our mind, body, and spirit together. That is the whole idea of the model. And so the spirit is a big part of who we are. And so love of source is really recognizing and connecting with that source of vitality, that source of love, that source of energy and creativity, which is greater than ourselves and yet readily and easily connectable. You know, it's right there with us all the time. And so in love of source, I talk about ways to connect with source, and it's going to be different for us. Some people are going to pray. Some people are going to meditate. A very good friend of mine, Michael, who's a practicing Buddhist, he has told me, Maria, for the life of me, I cannot meditate. I just can't do it. But I hike. And when I hear that stepping of the rhythmic, you know, movement of my feet on the trail, I'm connected. And so it's different for different people. And I love to talk about that. But I also love to emphasize in love of source is to recognize that that really is our connection to inspiration and creativity. It really is. And most of us connect with that through stillness. And that's something that we have to be very mindful about in today's environment because we're always so busy. I think that's probably one of the blessings that came out of the year on pause is that our busyness slowed down. And I think a lot of people became more mindful of that. And of course, that's the source of love. That's our most authentic self, right? That heart center. So that's the second pillar. And so if you think of, you know, really focusing and getting ourselves centered and then connecting with source, then the next automatic extension is love of others. And so what does that look like in the workplace? Well, that's really forgiveness and trust building. And it's ironic that most organizations that I work with today, trust and communication are their two biggest challenges. You know, the order might shift. It might be communication and trust. But 98% of the people that I talk to and the people that we work with, those are their top two challenges when it comes to people. And that's such a big deal. And that takes a skill set to be able to forgive. I share the story with people many times that I didn't really learn it, understand it until I was probably in my early 40s. I was raised Catholic, so I learned it intellectually and practiced it intellectually for many, many years, but don't really feel that I understood the power of forgiveness, not only for other people, but for myself until well into my adulthood. And then love of others, I think is so important because when we start to really love, honor, value one another, that's where we find real connection. And when people talk about communication challenges, what they're really talking about is connection challenges. You know, not to confuse information distribution with communication. That's information distribution. That's one way. But true connection really happens when we bring our whole selves into that conversation. And magic happens when that happens. But one of the things that I love to emphasize with love of others in that model is the work that Nonaka and Nishigishi did on innovative organizations, the two Japanese researchers. And they studied organizations for years and years and years to determine what makes one organization innovative versus another. And what they found was all of those organizations that are innovative have an energy, for lack of a better term, called BA. BA. And what they found was that as BA exists in all of the innovative organizations, they wanted to know, well, why do those organizations attract BA? You know, what is it about these four walls that attract BA? And what they realized was the organizational cultural elements in those four walls is what attracted Ba. And that they found that there were these four elements in every single innovative organization that they studied. And it was love. What a surprise, right? Love, care, trust, and connection.
Thank you for all of that. It was beautifully, I mean, I think your work, I've read a lot of people's organizational development work and development models. I think yours is so simple and so actionable. So Thank you for that. And yeah, and for those of you listening that love is a new concept in organizations to you, there is, thank God, and thank the universe, thank Source, there is so much more and more research that will back it up. So if you're an analytical person and you're feeling cognitive dissonance right now, we have a lot of research that backs this up, including in Maria's book. But the other thing that I love about your book and your model and the way you think and the way that you express this is addressing love, but also addressing fear. Mm-hmm. And understanding that that's a dichotomy, because I think everyone can relate to that. And it's so simple, yet so powerful. So can you talk about that? Maybe give us an example, an organizational example of how you apply that to leadership or organizations.
Yeah. Yeah. Fear is so prevalent. And I think that's why we can relate to it, because we know it. We may not be able to name it, but we know it. It's that yucky feeling that we get when we think about that meeting or that conversation that we need to have, or even going into work that day. And so once we can recognize and name it what it is, which is fear, then we can address it. Then we can start to modify and shape our behavior so that it is more love-based than fear-based. So for an example, you completed this big project, big report. Your team just really showed up. They were awesome. You submitted it, done, right? That is now off the checklist. You get a kickback. It's all wrong. Your boss says, you know, your team has to fix this by open a business tomorrow morning. So you find this out at 2:00 in the afternoon. Holy cow, what do you do? So we've got a couple of choices here. So one approach could be gathering the team together and saying, hey, this is what's happening. We've got to get this together. We got to get our you know what together, and we have to have this done by 8 a.m. tomorrow. Get ready for an all-nighter. And if you can't clear your schedule, then don't bother coming in tomorrow, because if we don't get this done, we don't have a job. So that could happen. I have experienced that. That has happened. That is definitely a fear-based approach. And we're going to bring certain energy to the table when we do that. And it's going to be exhaustive, and it's going to be non-creative, and we're going to be going through the motions, and it's going to be painful. You know, another option, another choice is you get the report back, you find out, you know, how can we fix this? What were some of the specific areas that were wrong? You bring the team together and say, we gave it a valiant try. However, there are some serious issues here that we need to address. We're on a very short deadline. This has to be done by 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. I think we're looking at an all-nighter team. So what can I order everybody for dinner? What do you need to do to clear your schedule? If you need to take a break right now to go pick up so-and-so and take so-and-so home, go do it. Let's reconvene back here in an hour and leave your dinner orders on my desk. Different energy we're going to come to that, right? That was loving. You're caring about the people. You're acknowledging what they did. You're valuing and honoring the work that they did, and you're asking them to do some more. So we'll come with a different energy.
Yeah.
And you know, the funny thing about fear is we're so used to it, we don't even recognize it. And that could be really good people who did example one. They just don't realize the fear-based approach.
I also think there's something about, and this could be just an older woman talking. So sometimes I come up with these things and I'm just like, it's just because of my age, or is this true? But this is my experience, that when I started my career, there was no internet. Everything was slower. The Same. Expectations were slower. We did things by snail mail and telephone. Mm-hmm. And conversation, and we were all in the same space.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like, and there was no texting at meetings, there was no cell phones to look at. We looked at each other when we talked. Right? Now, we love technology because we can do this together, right? But I think there's also this sense of urgency that my nephews experienced and my younger colleagues experienced that I never experienced. And some of that, I feel like, breeds fear.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah, that's a very interesting thought. And I wonder if it breeds fear because of that self-imposed, or maybe purposefully imposed by other people, consequence if it doesn't happen. You know, I mean, it was interesting as you're going through that, because I remember in my corporate days, before I'd leave for the office, and, you know, I was in senior management, so I didn't have 8-hour days. I had 10-hour days going on to 12-hour days, easy. But for sure, a minimum of 10-hour days. And I remember before I went into the office, I'd throw a load of laundry in. I'd maybe put something into the crock pot. And I'd push go on the dishwasher if the dishwasher was full, you know, but the breakfast dishes went in there. And I remember thinking at some point during that time that the modern conveniences that perhaps our mothers may or may not have had, our grandmothers certainly didn't have, added pressure to get more done. You know? So I wonder if that added pressure ties to fear.
I also think that we used to have weekends. I mean, I was in the hospitality business, so we didn't necessarily have weekends, but 2 days off was sort of normal, even if you were in the hospitality business. So we had downtime, and now it's not unusual, and I do it sometimes, so I apologize to my team. We're trying to get away from it. bosses who send fear-based communication on days off, you know, or I have a dear friend, and she calls me every once in a while and says, I shouldn't be sending my team emails at 4 a.m, right? I'm like, no, wait until 9.
Yeah, draft it if you must.
Don't push send.
Right.
Because I also think that there's personal anxiety and fear that gets communicated. So I think it's been a horrendous year with a lot of loss. And I also think that we need to slow down. So I appreciate that in your model and in your explanation of this. It's easier, I think, you know, this is why I think mindfulness and meditation helps us and is connected to a long thousands of years of spiritual teachings, right? That within the stillness or the slowness comes wisdom, comes pausing, comes love. You know, it's hard to connect to your heart if you're doing all the time. And I appreciated all your examples for Source, because I've been on this journey for 24 years with my clients to identify what is their point of view of, around, we use the word faith, not religion, but belief.
Uh-huh.
And what is their practice? And along the way, realize that my father's practice is golf. I have some clients that have their practice is driving, like taking long drives. And then uh-huh. I found out James Taylor often writes music when he's driving. So your faith or source practices can look very different.
Absolutely. And absolutely.
It's kind of fun to figure out what that is for everyone. But So what do you hope people will get out of reading your 10th anniversary edition? And what is up for you now and in the future as far as your own practice and work?
Yeah, I really hope, and this was one of the main reasons that I even did a 10th anniversary edition, is that I hope that this idea of leading with love, and equally as important, recognizing fear and fear-based leadership and fear-based organizations, I hope that that realization and awakening continues to happen and continues to grow. I am thrilled when organizations invite me to do a love-based culture assessment, you know, and then to have that discussion with their senior leaders about how fear is showing up in their organization, and to see the light bulbs turn on and the realization is, it's fuel, it's juice, you know, for the work, right? Keeps us going. So that's my hope, is that people will continue to awaken to the power of love, and that it's not just romantic love, what that looks like in the workplace. And again, waking up to fear. And as you said, I think that this year that we've just closed out helped a lot for people to see how fear impacts our lives. So I think the timing was divine, as it so happens. And so I feel that my work is only accelerating and continuing. So how that's showing up, I finished another book that's actually coming out in June, early June, June 8th, I believe. And I went even more spiritually based with this next book. It's A Course in Leadership, 21 Spiritual Lessons on Power, Love, and Influence. And I bring in lots of ideology of spiritual greats. I bring in Buddhism, Christianity, Taoism, the Quran, you know, just lots of wisdom. And the funny thing is, as I was working on this and taking the deep dive into each of these 21 lessons, I realized that a lot of spiritual wisdom is the same. It's very similar. And so that got me really excited, because to me, that's truth is truth is truth is truth. Regardless of what the packaging looks like on the outside or the words that we use, I'd love to see us use love and leadership much more readily, easily, and much more of our everyday vocabulary. Well, we do, but other people. And I'd love to see that in my lifetime. I think that would be really cool. And I really believe that the work that you do, the work that we're doing, and the many, many more books on the bookshelf now that have joined me in the last 10 years talking about heart-centered leading. I think that, like you said, we're heart warriors, we're love warriors. And I think that the work that we're doing is so important with the timing. We're here today for a reason, and we're doing the work that we're doing for a reason. And so when I start to feel a pinch in my business, you know, I think many of us felt a pinch during the COVID year. And as we're coming up and out of that and really focusing on keeping our businesses viable, I just have to go back to that again to remember why I'm doing the work that I'm doing, and to see the results that our clients are getting, as I'm sure you see as well. Once they start leveraging that powerful force known as love, you know, we all and organizations become unstoppable. So it'll be very interesting to see how the new tagline positively impacts that organization that you shared with us at the beginning.
I love this idea of a love-based assessment. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, like how that happens?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've taken the love-based leadership model with those three pillars, and I've juxtaposed it with a culture model that I also shared in the book. I had added a new chapter on organizational culture and what love looks like in the culture. And so I have that model represented by a tree, where there's so many things that we see above the surface in our organizations and so much more depth below the surface. And so I've taken the model and juxtaposed it with that to look at love and fear at those different levels within the organization, and to look for clues of how we are surrounding the culture with love, so that we can be even more mindful of leveraging that even more and nurturing that even more, but also to understand, oh, so there's some things here below the surface from a values perspective that fear is showing up. So that's obviously an area that we need to address. And I just love, I mean, I love the leadership work and I love the leadership development work. And I tell you, I'm like a little kid on Christmas morning when I get to work with an organization to help them intentionally shape their culture to be more love-based. And so we start with an assessment. We see, you know, where our areas of opportunity to make a really strong impact are. And then we work together for a good year to really understand, articulate, define, and then align the organization, who they are and who they want to be, with their everyday practices, so that it's not just, you know, pretty words on a wall, but that we're living a love-based culture day in and day out.
Well, I'm so glad I asked. That's amazing. So Maria, how do the listeners find out about your work and your current book and your future book? Where do they go to find all that information?
Yeah, thank you. So I think probably the best place to go would be drmariachurch.com, and that's drmariachurch.com, right? I had to have the DR in front of my name, according to the dean. So drmariachurch.com is the main website. And I love connecting with people on LinkedIn, which is how I believe you and I met, was very similar profiles on LinkedIn. And we were able to meet that way. So connecting on LinkedIn is also great. And there, of course, is a link on my website to purchase the book. Books are also available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the usual suspects. And I believe the publisher said that we might even be doing pre-orders for the new book, for the one coming out in a couple months. So both of those are available.
Well, congratulations on everything you do and for being a love pioneer.
And thank you. Same to you.
Procter & Gamble, if you're listening, I have the right consultant for you that needs to help you align your new tagline to your culture. It's been a delight. It's been so enjoyable. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, same here, Laurel. And thank you for doing the work and, you know, reaching out and connecting and keep shining that heart. Keep shining that heart. You're doing some great work.
And
thank
there's
you.
Obviously some love in the LinkedIn algorithm. So thank you, LinkedIn, for connecting.
That's right.
Connecting us. Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.